Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this isn't Star Wars Rank. This isn't Data Bank Brawl. Our Thursday time slot this week is dedicated to Resistance Reborn by Rebecca Roanhorse. It is the new Star Wars novel that came out just a short time ago. But you know what we like to do here at Force Center. We like to take it in and really dive deeper into these books. And that means I can't do this alone. I'd never dream of doing this alone. Joseph Scrimshaw, get in here. Welcome to this review.
I am happy to be here to dig into 300 pages of Star Wars. Just under 300 pages
just
with you.
Just under.
But still, we'll talk about it as though there were 300 pages.
Yeah.
You get those extra few pages worth of content here on Force Center.
Absolutely. Lately, we've been having a lot of fun going very, very deep into our topics.
Yeah.
And it's part of the fun. But I think it's the time. This is prime time Star Wars time. A lot of times in there.
Yeah. Super timey. Time.
We got shows. We got video games. We got books. And we got movies. And all of it kind of rolling into one.
Yeah.
So it's going to be fun. Before we do that, we want to remind you that today's
podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And Joseph, every week we like to recommend an audiobook, while it would make sense what we're doing this week.
Yeah, this week we're going to recommend the book we're about to review. So if you would like to, on us, you can go get Resistance Reborn by Rebecca Roanhorse. Pause this, listen to the entire thing, then listen to the rest of the review. Or if you're the kind of person who doesn't mind hearing spoilers, because this is going to be absolutely full of spoilers, check it out and then go listen to the book.
Absolutely. This is going to be a fun deep dive, full of spoilers indeed. You want to get up to speed. I don't think you should just be like, I'll figure it out.
No.
Let me listen and see if I like this book. Go get the book. Listen to it, and we're going to dive in. So that's your spoiler warning right there. Joseph, wow. This is an interesting book.
Yeah.
Really surprised me in some ways.
It's a very unique book, right, because we've had Road to the Force Awakens. We've had Journey to the Last Jedi.
Right.
And now this has been a journey to the Rise of Skywalker. We haven't, partially because of hiding reveals, partially because of timelines, we haven't had a book that is featuring major characters, major canon, setting up some ideas and some just important facts and rebuilding and emotional stuff like this book. So I've been really, really looking forward to this one because we haven't got things like it. And I was not pleasantly surprised, because I enjoy most of the books. I was pleasantly confirmed in my suspicion that I would enjoy it. But Ken, I wanted to start with you. What is your big picture reaction? Did you like it? Love it? Was it different than you expected?
Hot damn. I really loved a lot of the things this book did. And I do. I guess it's a little like Billy Crystal and When Harry Met Sally. When I get a new book, I don't read the last page, but I do flip towards the last page and get a rough idea of what I'm getting into. Page count.
Lengthwise, yeah.
What kind of investment is this? Let me pace my reading. I do love reading and read a lot of books, but sometimes if it's one or two chapters, I need to put it down. My mind wanders. I just have that problem. So I flipped to the end, and I was like, this is like one of the shortest of the new canon novels. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. I would think there's would be more in this important story. Rebecca Roanhorse packed so much story into those pages. It didn't need to be any longer.
Yeah.
That would just have been page fluff. This got right to it, but really covered a lot of ground, and I really enjoy that. And then, therefore, it had a fast pace to it, faster than a lot of other recent books.
Yeah, I would have read this one in one sitting if stupid human life hadn't interrupted me. But I read it probably in like three chunks. Cause I did.
Yeah.
It invites you to just keep reading. I wanted to keep reading. I was invested the whole time. Books like this have the challenge of when you're dealing with known characters, sometimes major characters, and then you flash to a character that you don't yet know that's new to the book. Sometimes that can be a slowdown for me in Star Wars books.
Sure.
It's not the case here, which we'll talk about that a little bit. My big picture is that I did really, really, really like it, just as much as I expected to, because I've come to expect a lot of these Star Wars canon books. Mm-hmm. I was pleasantly surprised that Resistance Reborn was both, hey, literally, we have no personnel in equipment and we're just about gone.
Yeah.
And we all have a lot of trauma to deal with. Mm. And we can only kind of be reborn if we literally process the trauma.
Yeah.
So I was really happy that it was both the kind of the internal and the external of the actual title, the plot, Resistance Reborn. Right. I did not expect it to be as dense as it is with canon from books, video games, comic books, even really celebrating long-loved, obscure, more obscure characters from the original trilogy. So that was a surprise. And to your good point about the balance of this book, I found myself thinking at the end, like, this is a book that is incredibly simple yet complex, because it stays kind of laser-focused on a short time period on the one concept of, we need to just even get the first building block into rebuilding. But then within that, that simple, straight story, we follow a lot of different people, a lot of different mini relationships, a lot of different traumas that need to be processed. So it's great, because it's like this this explosion of variations on the one main theme of rebirth.
Yeah. When I heard the title that when that was announced, I immediately had a flood of expectations.
Right.
And I got to say, in some ways, the book never touched those expectations, and I'm so glad.
Yeah.
Because I would have been like, okay, they're rebuilding the resistance, and then my fan fiction brain starts going in a certain direction. And this was like, no, you're 12 steps ahead. This is the moments after. This is the moments where we're processing it. And the fact that this really took the time to delve into some of the stuff with Leia and Poe specifically come to mind for dealing with some things, I was like, oh, okay, I got to change gears in the most wonderful way.
Yeah.
Like, we're building and rebuilding ourselves first.
Yeah.
I thought that was key.
Did you think that it was going to be spread over a wider period of time and might have walked up to the, like, and then this explains every single ship that they have in their armada come Rise of Skywalker movie?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. I thought there'd be not bigger stakes. There's huge stakes. The galaxy's at stake. They got to rebuild. I thought there'd be bigger scale enemies, villains, battles.
Yeah.
And I don't have a specific answer to that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, Hux didn't show up chasing them down again. All the kind of, no, it was on a smaller scale, which was important because they're on the run. They're scattered. They're hiding out. First Order probably now has their own things. You know, what is Hux and Kylo, Supreme Leader Kylo, doing? And we don't get that. And I think I would have expected more of that.
Yeah.
And again, glad it didn't. This is why I'm not writing. This is why a talented writer like Rebecca Roanhorse is.
Yeah, I really like that it does give us what feels like a full Star Wars meal, and in a surprising way in this era where we haven't had these kind of major releases around sequel trilogy canon with major important characters, but it still left plenty of room to tell different stories.
Absolutely.
And this is clearly happening just for kind of canon hounds out there to put it in context. This is a couple days after Last Jedi at most, because some events at the end of the Poe Dameron comic book run happened first. Poe goes off to meet up with Black Squadron.
Then I think we have
all the events of this. Then I think we have the 4-issue Star Wars Allegiance comic book.
Yes.
Which is basically centers around a mission to Mon Cala.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the middle reader Spark of Resistance book, because in that book they reference having already got the Mon Cala ships.
Right. And you've read that. I have not read that one.
Yeah.
I probably should. Okay. Yeah.
It's got some really fun stuff and some good, great character stuff. It is very much a middle reader adventure, resetting the stakes, but it's got some absolutely fun stuff with Rey and Poe and
that's probably more my speed. Middle readers.
That was not what I was saying.
No, I'm saying to myself. Yeah.
So we've already heaped some praise. Was there anything that you disliked or questioned?
Dislike? No. I thought most of the characters sounded like the characters. And it's an important thing when you're writing these books. And do you feel the author has a good take and a good handle on classic characters you already know, or some of the new classic characters? I thought Poe particularly shined.
I thought Finn's enthusiasm shone through, Leia's dry wit.
So that hit for me there. So as far as dislikes, because it was so quick of a read and the story moved so quick that even towards when one of the main villains kind of that story wraps up, I even had kind of like, oh, we're here already. Even though I knew the page count was low, I was like, oh yeah. So I don't dislike that at all. There's nothing I really dislike. Questioned. I'll say this. There was one moment I just wanted Wedge to shut up about making breakfast.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
But that's not a critique of the author. That's a critique of Wedge. Like, I don't care about the meat tubes or the eggs that you dropped.
Kitty eggs.
War has come to your door.
So you, being a fan often of the war part of Star Wars, you were like, shut up about the space chickens and getting an X-Wing, Wedge Antilles.
Exactly. And that was the only part where really I was reading the book and then experiencing it from this point of view of again, and I'm involved in the story.
Yeah.
It was it's the only time I just remember going like, is she going to get Wedge out of here? Like, what's? And I know Wedge is going to do something nice, right? You know, Wedge. It's Wedge. Yeah. Wedge. But like it was wonderfully awkward. Which, by the way, Wedge kind of is. If I remember Air of the Empire stuff when he's there.
Yeah.
He's kind of, I don't want to say bumbling, but like there's that one scene, he's like a spy, he's like the backup, right? And then like the person, I think they're talking to Lando, it's like, hey, watch your backup over there is really obvious. And like, so there's this kind of a lovable, he's a great fighter pilot, but he's just this guy. Hi, I'm Wedge. Like, so it all worked for me. But there was one point I just remember like, God, come on. Stop making breakfast, Wedge.
Fair enough. I liked getting on in years, Wedge Antilles, yeah. Who just wants to be making breakfast and is dealing with family dynamics and the, oh, do I have to go back to war? Come on. I was having a farm and a wife and a nice time being partners in life. I think my only qualm is, I wouldn't put it forth as a great critique of the book. I think one of the challenges of this mm-hmm. book is no matter how much you include, different fans are going to feel like different things shouldn't have been omitted.
Right.
And even that sounds judgmental. So it's not a critique of the book. It is me acknowledging that I was surprised by something that I wanted to be there that wasn't.
Gotcha.
So the thing that I didn't hear was, there was, you know, discussion of, yeah, Luke returned and he died and he's gone now.
Right.
And they're giving great weight to Leia. They're giving some weight to Rey of, you know, what's next. And there was weight in like, oh, wow, the Resistance is really in trouble. You really need help if even the Jedi, the Master Jedi, is gone. But to me, I love Last Jedi so much because what Luke did was accepting being a myth, because being a myth,
right,
being one person who can stand up to the whole First Order with a laser sword, that was supposed to ring out to the galaxy and be a symbol of hope. Mm. Like, that's, to me, like a part of what is going on in Last Jedi. That's why it ends with Tamiri Blegg being told the story and playing with action figures and raising the broom, you know? So I wanted, and that legend would start with the people who were there. So when Luke was mentioned, I wanted there to be a little bit of like, yeah, Luke's gone, but you didn't see what he did. Mm. Like, we're only alive because of him. He, you know, he had the strength to stand up to them. He made it possible for us to escape. I understand that it's focusing on the impact of these characters.
Right.
But I wanted them to advance the legend, and I wanted that to reinforce that his sacrifice helped them escape, and it rings out to the galaxy.
Yeah.
Is a myth, is hope.
I'm right there with you on that now when you stop and think about it. And it might have been, you know, we don't know the process. I don't know what's going on in those Del Rey's offices, but and Lucasfilm offices, where Luke in the novels has been very, either whether it's the legacy of the myth book about Luke,
legends.
You don't really get a lot, right? He's always on the side, even in like Bloodlines and stuff and Aftermath. Wendig famously said a lot of his Luke stuff was cut out. So I'm fascinated.
In Aftermath, there's even the, like, some people say he was there when Ben was born, right, and some people don't.
Maybe I just am so used to that.
Yeah.
But I'm very much a believer. We were talking about it. I kind of made a snide remark of just like, you know, maybe Leia's allies do show up a little bit later because they've heard the tale of Luke's story. So that could still happen. All that's, I think, what you're saying too. Because it didn't come up here.
Yeah.
I get that. I get that being a little critique. And I like the Rey stuff, and it's really fueling into Rey going into 9. We're getting that sense. We're really getting a sense of where she's at. But she wasn't there as a lot, and I just think, you know, it seems like Rey had to play on the bench for this story because there's other things going on.
Right, because there's a decision to focus on certain characters, which we will touch on that as well. And again, I'm always careful of criticisms that are, this thing that I want to see wasn't there.
Right.
Maybe there were drafts where it was there and it distracted from that driving urgency of, I am trying to convince you that we need help. And if I tell you the tale of Luke Skywalker, maybe that would inspire you, or maybe that would make you go, well, you're good. Yeah, you got all this hope with you. You got, you know.
Good to go.
Luke might not be here in reality, but physical world, but he's there in spirit. So I'll take my ships and go home. Like, yeah, maybe it wouldn't have worked.
Yeah, that's
but I would have taken even like a conversation between Poe and Finn working through it or something like that.
Right, Leia. No, yeah, that's interesting. Next, I say it still could be time. This story deals with such a micro level of we need this list of names of sympathizers. So we're not. You know, I hope in some material we see that conversation.
Yeah, and maybe it even is a like, no, we got that in 9 or we're planning something
absolutely.
Else.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
That kind of thing. All right, so we're always very theme focused here on Force Center. So I want to just dive into a couple of the themes. And then we're going to talk all sorts of details about all the various characters who show up and big canon moments in that. But just want to sort of frame it with what we feel this book is truly about. So we already mentioned it. It's in the title, Rebirth. That idea of can you be something different than you think you are if you need to be. This is reflected really well in one of my favorite parts of the book. Poe's big speech when they've gathered a lot of people on Ryloth, but they're already coming apart. They're right. Fighting each other. They got grudges and don't trust each other. And Poe basically says, yeah, I made all these mistakes. Let me lay them out for you. Leia even pipes in and says, yeah, I was Vader's daughter and that we were all someone else and leads up to this line of we have a chance to change ourselves, a choice. And he can't figure out how to end it. And Zay Versio comes in and says a choice to be better.
Yeah.
Big Star Wars theme, right? It's not always about redemption. You made one right choice and all is forgiven. It's about you can always make a different choice in the moment.
Yeah.
And this book plays that out with Poe really going like, all right, can I be a leader? Finn has fully decided to be Rebel Scum, but he's trying to figure out how to do that.
Right.
Rey knows she's supposed to be something more, but she's trying to figure that out. You got Wedge and Nora trying to be, you want us to be leaders and generals? Okay, we're pilots.
We're farmers and...
Yeah.
Old married couple now, yeah.
Poe's also like, I don't want to, espionage is not what I'm good at, but I've learned my lesson. I'm going to do, everybody is trying to be what they need to be for this to survive.
Yeah. Powerful stuff. I want to focus a little bit on that Zay Versio line because that's this, when this story starts, this book starts, you're starting to get excited about, Shriv's here and Zay's here. And some of those we heard, but then there's other people. But it was like, it's literally picking up after the pages of the Poe Dameron comic. And I'd read that series. I was just getting excited. But this pull of the choice to be better, talk about Luke's legacy. That is part of it.
Right.
From the video game Battlefront 2, that is what Luke says and talks and preaches a little bit about to Delmeco, her father. And that just, it was one of those kind of chill-inducing moments. And that's powerful coming from a book.
Yeah.
From a book connecting to a video game.
Connecting
to a video
to
game.
To the bonus DLC content from a video game, which is where Zay Versio is from. Yeah.
Putting the explanation mark on Poe, a movie character speech. So that was the connection and warm. And it's an important lesson. It is a key part of Luke and the core of the Jedi from a certain point of view of, we all have a choice to be better. And big props to Rebecca Roanhurst for working that in so well. I love that.
So well. And it's cool for Poe because he's already learned the lesson. He's on in Last Jedi. He's on the path. He wants to make better choices. He wants to be a leader. Deals with a lot of guilt, which we'll talk about. But it's not just like, oh, great, I flipped the leader switch. I love that this is a speech where it's like, I know I need to answer for my mistakes I've made and own them. Or people won't trust me. I know I need to make a big speech to bring everybody together. And I'm going, and I don't have the end of this speech. So somebody else comes in,
Yeah.
And that makes it about, hey, we're in this together. And I'm still learning how to be a good leader. And it pays off when, at the end, he does give a great speech.
Yeah.
And Finn's like, you're getting pretty good at this. So we get this watch Poe learn on the job when it comes to speechifying. In terms of a sort of this idea of rebirth in a big picture way, another thing that jumped out to me is I love that right toward the end when Leia is feeling exhausted.
Yeah.
Rey turns to her, to Leia. Rey not even really realizing, I think, internally that Leia is feeling down,
mm-hmm.
and says, you know, as long as we fight, there's hope.
Yeah.
And Leia, you know, has that like, ah, great.
Yeah.
I needed to hear that. I'm the one who's always saying hope, 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 hope.
I'm preaching.
And it's nice. It was just such a nice moment to see the youth preach back to the older generation when they really needed to hear it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a process that makes it so throwing words like hope around doesn't get, it's an easy patch for everything. Of like Leia has to fight to keep it,
mm-hmm.
and she needs that from Rey, who's learning that lesson for herself.
Yeah.
You know, cause also, you know, in that speech she's talking about, like, well, yeah, everywhere we go, the First Order comes and everybody who gets associated with us is in trouble.
Yeah.
But they're in trouble anyway.
Yeah.
And the only,
yes, yeah.
the only, our only choice is to fight, because otherwise they're just going to roll over us and everyone we love. So we fight, we keep fighting, and we have hope. And it's just, in terms of rebirth, having a young person say to Leia what she has always said. Powerful.
It's Leia knowing that this is going to go on, her legacy is going to go on, but also that maybe the load's not always going to be on her shoulders.
Yeah, yeah.
It's her poor Leia.
Poor tired shoulders.
Yeah, no, I liked a lot of that. And they're dealing with the Poe trauma. You know, Leia's dealing with her physical trauma of the spacewalk, so to speak. But I love the way Poe's mistakes were dealt with, because that was a big thing coming out of Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Even folks who really love the movie, like you and I, were like, yeah, Poe made some mistakes. Leia kind of, I guess, forgave him on the fly, but it cost people lives. And Star Wars had never dealt with that before, at least on the good guy's side.
Yeah.
You know, the good team. Cool, we won, but hey, we lost this stuff. So it was a conversation people were having, either online or in person, of, I don't know, Poe really messed up.
Yeah.
Are we going to let him walk that easily? And the answer is, Poe's not going to let himself walk that easily.
No, that's one of the richest parts of this book is how much he is experiencing his trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Leia's going through trauma of, I have to process all the people I lost. Like that was one of the moments of Luke I like, where she has to tell mm-hmm. someone that he passed. And when she is saying it, she's like, at first, it's just like, oh, this is information. It's written really elegantly. We're just like, and that one hurt.
Yeah.
Like she's saying to herself internally, like, oh, I thought, I didn't realize I was not as, I haven't had a chance to process this, and I'm forgetting because I'm keeping on moving.
Mm.
Then obviously other characters, Zay and Shriv,
mm-hmm.
Just lost Iden Versio.
Yeah.
Like they just
lost. Yeah.
Yeah. And pretty recently Delmico as well. Yeah. Right. So they just lost, old friends and parents. Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Yeah, and I feel like most of the characters are going through some level of loss, processing the Hosnian cataclysm or their planet being taken over, or the state of the galaxy suddenly changing, or, you know, a loved one dying that they can't get past. So that idea of, well, you have to process your trauma was really, really powerful in this book as well.
The trauma of the resistance itself is something that this all leads to, and these are the people that make up that fight. So what a well-stated theme, and the way it was dealt with all flows into moving forward.
Yeah. On a sort of philosophical level, in terms of engaging with this story as deeply as possible.
Yeah.
It says, idea of rebirth, it's in the title. Do you feel like trauma is necessary to have a rebirth, to truly change? I'm not saying like in order to get better at exercising every day, several loved ones need to be, you know, you need to lose loved ones to, like, I don't mean it like that. I mean, like, kind of in a more mythic storytelling way, do you have to lose something and hit your depth before you can head back up to the light?
I think the long, dark tea time of the soul is important. It's important to storytelling. It's important to these characters. It's important to us. We should all bottom out at some point. But I agree. I'm not, not encouraging trauma to hit anybody.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean. Like, and sometimes those traumas can be small, man. Death by a thousand cuts here. And I'm someone who been very fortunate. External trauma's not really found its way to me, but a lot of it's been internal stuff. And having to get to some bottoms, and then that starts your path forward. If you're open to it, And that's where I think Poe dealing with a lot of his stuff is really powerful, of being open to it, even when other people around you are like, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You have to use that as a springboard to the next thing. And the resistance has to use the trauma of what they just experienced, a complete almost annihilation, as a springboard to what they're going to do next.
Yeah.
And it's not just military maneuvers. I love that it's I really love that you're digging into this theme, because that it's truly the next emotional move of a military resistance, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's important for all of us to grow from those kind, not just failures, but just things where you really feel, this is it. I've done wrong. Can't recover. So who I am. I think that's important.
Yeah, and you need to choose to be better. Yeah, I mean, I won't go into a too deep of a personal life, but I had a kind of a significant birthday where right before it, kind of everything in my life collapsed. Mm. And it was a miserable time.
Yeah.
But when I think about it, it's a happy time in my mind now, because it was you have to rebuild. And going through that process of, I see how I led myself to this path, and now it's a happy memory to go like, all right, I'm going to fix that. I'm not going to do that again. That doesn't work for me. So I'm going to rebuild over here.
Me losing my job in a way in January 2018 from Collider and everything full time, where it's like, that was a rock bottom that I look back now, just what you said, it's a different trauma, but just like, that was horrible. And it's the best thing that ever happened to me, because I chose to make it that.
Right. Because you chose to invest more time in, like, I'm not just going to go get another 9-to-5, no matter how cool it is great of a job. It's, or you're going to try to make it on your own with podcasts
and adventures. And that's the surface, but also, like, what got me here? And what got me here was not someone fired me. It was like, what did I do to not be picked up for the next team? Because other people were.
Yeah.
And some of it's my fault. Some of it might have been others, but to be able to go like, no, I did that. There's some things I did.
Yeah.
And then it turns into something good. You know, I don't know the specifics of what you're talking about too, but just like, all right. Like you just said, how did I get here?
Yeah. Just just a shocking amount of physical and emotional laziness, not taking care of
absolutely
the things around me, and just letting myself be angry and go, that's probably a problem, but what if I played a video game for 5 hours? Oh, hey, the problem didn't go away at all.
We're not supposed to do that.
Yeah, it doesn't. But I think you're making a really important distinction that there is the trauma, like Poe is suffering, of I made bad choices. I pulled this mutiny, and it literally got people killed. The First Order, the plan, Holdo's plan would have worked.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't need to get into the whole debate of, you know, should Holdo have told the Poe the plan? Poe obviously has feelings about that he feels he made a mistake. Mm-hmm. He straight up says, she was my commanding officer and I should have followed, and it would have been fine. So Poe is dealing with trauma of a choice that he made.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Leia. It's like, she's been a strong leader her entire life. She hasn't made a sort of moral misstep in any way.
Right.
And it's more stuff like, this is the galaxy and I have, you know, made the choice to stand up and deal with it. So you're talking about this kind of like with your own personal life, like, hey, a bad thing happened. Maybe some of it was my choices. Maybe some of it was just, hey, life's hard.
Yeah.
It's not always fair. And I like that kind of both sides. This isn't just a bunch of people going to sort of like, space therapy because they screwed up. It is also responding to, this is a rough place and we deal with it as best as we can.
Yeah. And dealing, and then, you know, and obviously there's some other traumas that happen to people and everything that you literally have no fault in because they are brought to your doorstep or you experience them. And
a giant laser blows up your planet.
Let's be clear about that. You know, Rey did not choose to be kidnapped by Kylo and have her mind invaded, you know, but that's a trauma too. So I definitely want to make a clarification too, that we're not talking about some of those, you know, horrible real world traumas that could happen to an individual, that you, no matter what you did, you would have ended up in that spot. I want to be clear, but for me, I really connected to what Poe went through.
Yeah.
Big mistakes, man.
Yeah. In the inevitability of, if we go down this path, which we think is right to fight the First Order, we're going to have more losses. We're going to deal with this more, but we're going to find a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So great stuff there. Getting into a little bit more of the just kind of Star Wars details. there's a big contrast to me in this book between the accessibility of it features major characters from the movies. We get to go deep into the mind of Poe Dameron and Leia Organa, and to a lesser extent, Wedge Antilles.
Yeah.
And then in contrast to that accessibility, chock full of characters from comic books, video games, DLC content from video games, novels, you know, the fact that Wedge Antilles is one of the major characters from the movies that gets featured. Yes. And he's, hey, if you're a Star Wars fan, he's famous.
Yes.
If you like those movies and you've seen him a couple times, you don't have a Wedge Antilles tattoo. You know what I'm talking about. So how did that balance work for you? That on one hand, it was, hey, if you just go see the sequel trilogy movies, you don't read books, you've never really been a huge Star Wars fan before.
Yeah.
Poe, Leia, huge, totally accessible. And then who are all of these people?
It worked really well. I had some people, maybe I think in my Discord chat saying, hey, I heard this is, it's kind of a collection of all the, a lot of the new canon characters. Will I be lost? And I was like, no, you won't be lost because Rebecca does such a great job of introducing them, explaining them, who they are. We'll talk of some of the two reveals that I'm convinced she wrote for you and I. Yeah, you don't get lost at all, but it's fun. But then I and because there's a, it's a little bit of a bounce back, I found myself, I would turn the page of the chapter and it'd see like, oh, this is a, like a Leia chapter or a point of view of Leia. I'd be like, oh yes, I want to stick around Leia for the story. Then that would end. And then I'd be like, oh, okay. But I kind of want to see what Shriv's doing and Snap and everything. So it was a great balance.
Yeah.
And how both sides, these major, major film characters are important to me, but also how I've come over the last 5 years to become attached to these characters that have dotted the other areas of Star Wars media.
Yeah.
Good balance.
Yeah, I thought it made it unique because I do feel like with like maybe one little quibble, a just, hey, I've seen these two movies a bunch of times, Force Awakens, Last Jedi, I love them.
Yeah.
I want to read this book. You're going to be treated a ton of Poe and Leia and sides of Rey, Rose, and Finn. But if you've been following along, this is fist pumping, right? Each character shows up. Some of them have a bunch of stuff to do. Some of them only have a little to do. But it's not only the reward for investing in reading all this. It is the, hey, when you're down, all of the heroes come together.
Yeah.
Right? It feels really fist pumping of like, that person's here. That person's here. They can make this work. Come on, guys, get together and kick ass because you're all here. You can make it work.
Yeah, and this, I understand there was a feeling, it seemed to be attached more to Last Jedi, but I think it really did start with Force Awakens, that we were sold. I think you could argue how hard we were sold, but we were given the idea that the comics, the books, it all starts to build and it goes to the movies and then, I think people made a leap to MCU-like connections, and that wasn't present as much. We definitely know that. And either you adjusted or you didn't. But even if you adjusted, folks like you and I, you're kind of like, oh, I wish Snap would mention Nora in Force Awakens or something like that. So this felt, I don't think any of us need to be, we don't deserve to be rewarded for all these years busting our ass reading these books. But this one, it was such a nice surprise to be like, yeah, Yendor's back.
Yeah.
And then we went to the planet that's coming out in Fallen Order. We're pretty excited for that. Like, and all of it worked. It wasn't a checklist.
Yes.
It wasn't like, all right, we need this or that. Because it wasn't just like Black Squadron was back. They were referencing things that just happened. So it flowed like a continuous story. And the gang's all here.
Yeah, it was finishing this adventure that they ended on.
Yeah.
Showing you the fallout that the Poe Dameron comic ended on. The only one for me that did stand out a little bit is when they're first getting to Ryloth, there's such a buildup of who is it that's allowing them through. Because they arrive and they're afraid they're not going to be able to get through. It's a great scene where Leia forces Rey to do the bluffing.
Yes.
Which is just great to see her doing the on-the-job training. And there is a buildup to who is it going to be. So I did get a little suckered that it was going to be a character in larger canon. Like I thought it was maybe going to be Hera. I don't know Hera's whereabouts.
Yeah.
And I was I loved Yendor. He's, you know, part of the Claudia Gravers from Lost Stars and Bloodline, and, you know, tracks through this history and has a history with Leia, so it all works. That was the only part where I felt like, especially if you were not as big into the books, that felt like it was leading up to a bigger reveal than Yendor.
I agree with that. I think I was really thinking Hera. And then I had Yendor comes and I was like, Yendor. And then I had to do a little bit of a recap. Oh, yeah. Lost Stars, the Bloodlines. So, yeah. But that's, when that happens, already Rebecca Roanhorse had put in enough of these all-stars showing up that I think I was getting caught up in the big reveals next.
I think that's a good point of, like, that's a minor critique from my own experience.
Sure,
But it is about that, like, getting excited for the unveil.
Yeah.
Once Yendor shows up, character makes perfect sense to be exactly there. Yeah. Everything that's going on with him sort of thematically of, like, this is an offshoot of what Cam Syndulla did.
Mm-hmm.
This is my family running it, so I too am risking everything. The same way you are, Leia. We can see eye to eye. Mm-hmm. All the actual, like, true storytelling with Yendor was great.
Yeah.
Did you think at any moment, because it was All Stars, which, thank you, is the best way to say that, because it was the All Stars of Star Wars canon?
Yeah.
Did you ever start to feel like this was a send off to this general era of storytelling in the books and comics?
I did. I would be curious, but I almost don't want to know if that was intentional in any way, shape, or form. You know, if they're sitting down and she's pitching her story and they're telling her, you know, and they're working on what the story's going to be about. Was it like, hey, we kind of want you to wrap this up? It had that feeling, which makes me a little sad that we're not going to spend more time with Snap Wexley after 9. But it also makes sense.
Yeah.
With, doesn't mean we can't go back. It doesn't mean you can't get the Shriven Lando adventures from something. But it had that sense to me of all of this leading into 9. And I'm not, you know, I tell you, I don't, unless they're mentioned, I don't have a lot of hope that a lot of these characters are going to show up in 9. I don't think there's a secret Shriv cameo happening. It could.
Yeah, I think the Rogue One is such a great pointer where it's visual and audio, which is how stories are told. Let me be more clear. we are already seeing in the Rise of Skywalker trailer the Armada, right?
Yes.
So you could do a lot of nods with just hearing, like, you know, Shriv reporting in, you know, Nora Wexley online.
Yeah.
Not online. That's not the way they say it. You know what I mean. But seeing a ship that you know, or hearing the call sign the same way you heard Hera Syndulla being called over the comms in Rogue One.
Yeah.
That maybe we'll get some of that sort of, like, it's not disrupting the big storytelling. It's not going on a casting call for the perfect human to play Yendor.
Yeah.
But it's acknowledging.
Yeah, I hope in some way. I'm not hopeful, only just seeing how J.J. thinking how J.J. makes some of these movies. But who knows? Who knows? I'm not going to. And they could be there in the corners of our minds.
Exactly.
But all that to go back to your original question. Yeah, I took this as a, here's all your friends and we'll be together and right off in a space car. Yeah.
Yeah. Right off into the Rise of Skywalker, which is a conversation for another time, but it does make me feel like they got big plans for Project Luminous.
Oh, yeah.
For taking up lots of great retail is space in the comic and book part of Star Wars. All right. How do you feel? We've talked a little bit about which characters are featured, but to just really kind of lay it out more, we only get access to the minds of Leia, Poe, and Wedge for main characters.
Yeah.
The villain of the piece and some of the other new characters, we get into their heads a little bit. We're going to talk about that. But for right now, I just want to focus, like, why does it work for you? Why do you think the choice was made that it's these characters that we are hearing from? We get a little bit of information about Rose, Finn, and Rey, but it's all from the outside. We don't go into their minds.
So I ended up being very much okay with it. Only I think this was just kind of, we're also aware of, you know, again, going back to the Luke thing, not necessarily talking about what you were talking about earlier, but in other books when he's not showing up, you're like, okay, clearly there's some real estate Lucasfilm saying don't touch. So when it started, it jumped out when Rey, because there's a couple of points, I'm totally paraphrasing the entire book, but it just kind of felt like early on, it was like, she's just in the corner sulking. She's not necessarily doing that, but it's just like, she's not active. She's not, you know, there's these moments with her, but you can sense she's not part of this story too much, if that makes sense to me. And then it was like, okay, I just, as a longtime reader and someone who we study this stuff every week, you're like, okay, that just means there's something else going. So I wasn't disappointed after that.
Yeah.
But initially I felt some of it. And Rose and Finn, I want their point of view. That's a testament to the strength of their characters. Their point of view. So we didn't get it, but all right, this is real estate we can't touch yet.
Yeah. And we get into Rey's head a little bit in that Spark of Resistance middle reader book. And it lines up with everything that we're seeing, where she is clear on her conviction to be a part of the resistance, happy to be making these friendships with the other heroes, struggling with the Force. I think there's a passage in particular, just like, no, I'm supposed to calm my mind.
Right.
But I really got a lot on my mind.
And there's great stuff with her and Leia. Like, but that's just, you know, you just got a sense early on. I was like, okay.
I am struggling with it. And they do some great, without going too deep into telling the truth, there is some great stuff with her, and we're going to get into that in the canon. But I think I appreciated it, the Poe and Leia in particular, because drilling down and saying, of this main core characters, we would love to hear all of their thoughts, but who is telling this tale of the resistance, the military and family operation?
Right.
That is the resistance. Who do we need to really deal with? Well, Leia is the leader of the resistance. She's grooming Poe to be the leader.
Yeah.
He's the one who learned the hard lesson about leadership. He's like, Rose had an epiphany about how to approach the battle in The Last Jedi by saying, save the things we love, not fight the things we hate.
Mm-hmm.
Finn learned that taking sides matters, and he wants to take the side of the resistance. Rey's dealing with all sorts of stuff with her own destiny and Kylo and all that.
She's got her hands full.
But Poe and Leia are the ones who are like, this is our, you know, not that they're aren't all part of it, but they are the ones like who are, their arcs are tied to this fight has to continue in this form.
Mm-hmm.
And we're the ones who've taken up the mantle.
It's similar. Slightly to Leia in original trilogy and Luke is saying this is her rebellion, right? This is her story. Poe, I think part of the not confusion, but the when you look at Poe going into the Force Awakens, and I think we talked about it recently on the Force Center, so I'm thinking about it. This is the Han Solo.
He's the roguish cool guy,
and he's got those.
He's the fly boy.
And then when you see him, how do we do this? You talk, I talk. You're like, yeah, he's definitely the Han Solo. He is. Except for Han Solo was still the Han Solo of Force Awakens, and he is more on the Leia side of things.
Yeah.
You know, this is his fight, and he is the one. He's the chosen one, I think, in terms of leadership by her.
Grew up with rebel heroes in a Force tree on Yavin, right? So he's born and bred rebellion resistance.
Absolutely. So now it makes even more sense to focus on them, too, in this book.
Yeah. So I thought that was really great. And it made me hopeful, like you're saying, is maybe it's just like, let's not get too – we want to have a little bit of elbow room with what exactly Rose and Rey are thinking and Finn, but also made me hopeful of like, maybe there's some storytelling there. Maybe we're going to see a little bit of this. I could almost see a comic book that is Rose and Finn's journey through this story, these couple of days immediately following The Last Jedi. And get into a little bit more their headspace is a possibility. Let's talk about the villains, because as you were saying, this was not Hux ranting. This was not, Kylo Ren sitting down with the leadership of the First Order going, here's how we're going to run things now that I'm the Supreme Leader. Do I need to choke anyone? Not getting to deal with any of that. The villain is the threat of the First Order, the ships of the First Order, but the actual villain is Winsher Bratt, a violent bureaucrat in the records office of Corellian Engineering Corporation. When you pull it out that way, it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
That's the big villain.
Yeah.
Of the absolute heroes of Star Wars, but it's great in the book. It works. It makes good points. How did you feel about Winsher Bratt?
It made me initially go back to A New Dawn, The first, remember the heady days of 2014, the first of the canon album, and Count Vidian was the villain, right?
Okay.
And I think I've seen some stuff where Vidian might be considered an imperial dignitary, so all right, puts him at a little different level. I don't know. But Vidian was kind of a guy working his way up and, you know, was not getting the, really glossing over, but, you know, not getting the promotions and respect he wanted, and he recrafted himself in this image. And I didn't take to it that much. I didn't like New Dawn as much. It gives us Captain Ray Sloan, all stuff. I want to revisit it because there's a lot of great stuff with Hera and Kanan. But this is the first book. And this is a lesson of the new canon novels. That's the first book. And I'm thinking, New Dawn, we're gonna get rebels throwing grenades at stormtroopers. We did actually get that. But instead, we got a different look at what's going on and building out this galaxy, yeah, this new galaxy. So I flash back to that and how much I did enjoy what this meant and what I did enjoy about this bad character. He does some really violent things there with some of his subordinates. Not that I've grown to give myself credit for growing, but just like, oh, we're in a different spot than 2014 where this works because it shows you how the First Order is spreading.
Yeah.
Not just through military might, but through the corruption, the perversion of all normal aspects of life, and has been.
Yeah.
They've been on Corellia for a bit now. And I like that a lot now. I like what it says.
Yeah. I like that it is a little bit of that, you know, go back to Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and that became a trope of that. We're not so different, you and I. Like,
yeah.
The story of the resistance that they want it to be is we're going to go to all of the people.
Yeah.
And we're going to remind them that you're fighting for yourself. Join us, because joining us is fighting for yourself. The everyday people are the people who make the difference. So to have the villain be the flip side of that, of an everyday person who can be turned into a monster,
yeah,
or can be prodded into becoming a monster, right, by the First Order. That's a fresh take, because we're getting a lot of stories right now. Black Spire Outpost has a new First Order officer who's kind of just a sociopath who enjoys violence, right?
Yeah.
And then in Spark of the Resistance, we have that First Order officer is really officious and a climber and a great criticism of, you know, an evil, you know, cog in the machine.
Right.
So it was great when I was like, what take are we going to get? Because both of those characters had like lots of speeches about like, I will impress this person and then I will overcome them in rank and I will get unlimited rice pudding. Whatever rewards
order,
they want.
The First Order rice pudding is top notch.
I stole that from the Seventh Doctor from Doctor Who.
There,
anyway, full credit to Sylvester McCoy and the writer of that episode. Anyway, I liked that it was somebody didn't even really fully comprehend at first. It feels like what he was caught up in.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But somebody who just like, I think all of us are very subject to suddenly saying like, oh, could I get a promotion? Could I be seen as more important? Like that's his introduction was like, I love the look on their faces when they realize that I'm actually a VIP now.
Oh, there was a lot of that. Yeah.
They have to respect me. So you start out with that and then you get to that point at the end where he viciously physically assaults character who's trying to do right. And all of the writing about to me it was like it was really painful and real, because it was, I've never seen quite in a Star Wars book like the moral of the dark side applied to a real human. When he talks about like the I fear losing everything. And he almost blacks out. He can't even remember doing horrible violence to another human being.
Yeah.
But then he finds strength and power in anger and violence. Mm. And then there's that great passage. I'm just paraphrasing. I can't remember exactly what it was. Of just like the anger leaves for a moment and all he has is the horror and the emptiness.
Yeah.
That it didn't really accomplish anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he tries to get that anger back and keep it. And like, it was such a horrifying insight into real world violence and into the metaphor of the dark side of like, you have to be angry all the time.
Because
if you lose that anger, you will step back and realize what you've done.
It's like George describing Anakin's being trapped and all those kind of things.
This is it
on a smaller bureaucratic level. And for to me, the insight I loved about it was, you know, the First Order's got military control. We know that. We hear that. They got everything that the Empire had and more on the military side. But they also, at some point, there's people up there somewhere between Kylo and Hux and Snoke. There's people that are like, all right, but we also got to run the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Difference between winning and ruling. So how are we going to do that? And how do we get these systems? Yes, we got the Force. Yes, we go in there. I mean, not the Force, but we can come in with Force. We're going to do that. But we've got to get people to work with us. And how do we sell it? And there was a lot of Wincher Brat being sold this. But this, and that's why when it, like his pad gets stolen, he kind of gets in trouble. It's like a weird, like, you know, you messed up. You're going to get that job with the First Order you wanted. And so the fact that they're just selling that to him on this level, and the First Order hangs over, it's a shadow over everything. But you could see how that might work in their favor as they spread across the galaxy.
Yeah. And then I love that it was countered by the character Monty Clay, I believe, who had that great, who's the one who ends up getting the list, the MacGuffin that moves the plot. MacGuffin is not a, I should use a more serious word because it's quite important, that list. But I like that he has that passage of, I knew the Hosnian cataclysm happened, but I couldn't conceive it. It was so far away and I didn't know anyone there. But when I saw people being held and tortured, they had been clearly been beaten, and I was being asked to help just hide them, disappear them in the system without rights. That's what broke me and made me try to do the right thing.
Yeah.
I thought that was a great counter to Wincher Brat's horror.
And there's again someone being reborn.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Good. Very good point. Do you have any favorite, like, just isolated moments that you want to be sure to touch upon?
I liked the undercover stuff. Little spy thriller with Poe and everything.
Dressing up all fancy and
dressing
everything.
Up and dressing up Finn. We can talk about that.
Yeah.
I liked there was the Wedge and Nora. It was great to have Nora back. I like when they both come to the decision by themselves, but don't tell the other person.
They both pack their to-go bags at night.
And I loved in the morning, like, well, I decided right away what I wanted. I figured you need to take a night. No, I decided right away. I figured that was really, really great and kind of a good insight into romantic life, I guess, so to speak.
I felt
long-term romantic life.
I felt seen. My wife and I do that kind of thing all the time. It's like, I'm okay with it, but I just want to make sure you were okay with it. That was great.
That stood out there.
Wedge stuff, it really hit me. It painted the picture of wanting to just have this happy life. I liked his, when he said, I was almost going to name the Keedys. That like I almost settled entirely into this life. I almost gave the space chickens names. And the other moment with Wedge that really struck me is like, I'm really used to violence. I've been through a lot.
Right.
But seeing this person I had to shoot in my yard.
Yeah.
Like that was such a great image for Wedge to be like, I want war to be over there. It's a thing that I go and do because I have to. And I want this to be the safe place that I retreat to where this kind of stuff doesn't happen. Yeah. In here, there's a burning corpse, a corpse with a burning hole in it. Cause I had to shoot this person in my yard. And if that's not a symbol for, you know, hey, the fight's going to come to you regardless. It's great.
I love that.
Painful, but
they were kind of, weren't they worried too about the neighbors?
Yes,
the name. Well, they're gonna see that X-wing.
They're gonna see that X-wing. Because basically, like, nosy neighbors might report us to the First Order. Oh, no. You got.
Well, we're gonna go through some character stuff, but I just later. It was with the where's that the Stronghammer, right?
Oh yeah, Sanric Stronghammer. Yeah,
I really like that character, and his death kind of got me too.
Yeah, it's a powerful one. This is just a very minor detail. I love that 3PO's history of Ryloth that he rattles off says that Leia Organa's ancestor Anakin Skywalker was there. This detail where he called Cham Syndulla a traitor, and people are like, whoa. Nah, that's not the word we use to describe him on Ryloth.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, many of my databanks are for the Empire, so they have bias.
Yes.
That was, beautiful detail.
Yeah,
beautiful. And then my final list is just turn a phrase from Maz Kanata. Yeah, you don't have time for a psychedelic experience, do you, Dameron?
The Maz scene was... The Maz stuff is great. The Maz... I love that kind of... I had not had time to get involved, that kind of thing or whatever. I liked it a lot because it was really in keeping with both the spirit of Force Awakens and also The Last Jedi. And her appearance in The Last Jedi is not my favorite thing for various reasons, but I like the character of Maz. I'd have no problem with it being Maz, but just the execution of that scene. But it married the two a little bit.
It really did.
The interaction and everything like, about it.
I help the way I'm going to, when I'm going to, and I'm your weird aunt.
Yeah.
You know, I'm your weird, how many thousand-year-old, she's owned that castle for a thousand years, how many years has she been alive?
It's true.
But really that, like, that whole, like, yeah, it just looks like I'm laying back putting feline feces on my skin for reasons, but then... Because I can lure you into a trap and flips Poe. So great. Yeah. So great. All right. Well, on that moment, on that Poe flipping moment, we are going to take a break.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome. Like, what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome. Like, what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And we are back to talk more Resistance Reborn. Ken, we are going to dive into some of the big canon reveals and moments with some of the bigger characters.
Yeah.
The first one I wanted to ask you about is the book kind of puts forward the idea that Leia's allies might not have answered in The Last Jedi, because they were all being targeted, arrested, silenced by the First Order.
Yeah.
Is that how you read that, and how do you feel about that?
So, that's how I read it, and I love it. Going back to our top point up top. Yeah, I really want people to be inspired by Luke. Clearly you do. Clearly a lot of people do, and I think they will be, right? But this gives a real good answer of, oh, they couldn't answer the phone because they were yanked away. That makes sense. It's something I personally never even really thought about as an answer.
Yeah.
It's so funny. We all kind of go to, why didn't Lando answer? Did he hate her now? And it's like, maybe Lando was taken,
Yeah.
I really like that one a lot.
Yeah, I really like the idea that, yes, a bunch of people who would have been like, yes, getting in my ship now might not have been able to answer. Yeah. And there's still plenty of wiggle room where there could be plenty of people who would just be like, I want to help, but I'm afraid.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of putting my neck out.
Which makes sense. Yeah.
So I think this is one of those great things that it provides more clarity if you want it, but you can still have the room to imagine all sorts of different reasons people didn't choose to answer. All right, Rey, we did not actually go into her head in terms of the way the book was written, but we still did get a lot of juicy Rey information. In particular, Rey and Leia have a conversation early on, the great scene where Rey brings her a Gatalanta tea.
Yes.
Probably not knowing that that's going to make her think of Holdo, right?
Yeah.
Definitely not. Rey wouldn't know that. But Rey is wanting to understand Ben Solo. And says, it's great passage relates, sort of like, man, she's nervous. What is it? What does she want? She cared about Ben. She wants to know about Ben. And then Rey says, he wanted me to join him, but I couldn't. I thought I could help him. But he only wanted me to become like him. Leia says some stuff to follow up, but I think really crucial. No one can save Ben but himself. How did you feel about those very important perspectives being clarified in this book?
I thought it was great information. Great information. Is this what Rey felt in that moment? You know, literally, you know, when she's like, Ben, get him to stop the ships and... turns around and Ben ain't home. Is that what she was right at that moment? Is that when she got it?
Please don't go this way. Yeah. Like one of her, my favorite line readings of realizing what that means.
Yeah. And so that really just adds to a moment that's already one of my favorites in Star Wars.
Yeah.
And Leia saying no one can save Ben but himself is a great addition to her kind of feeling he's gone when what she tells Luke, you know, and he's like, I'm not here to save him. So it's a good kind of like add on to that of like, he's gone. He can save himself. No one else can.
Yeah. I feel like a great response where it feels like to me in Last Jedi, it's like, I've finally accepted he's gone and Luke has it. No one's ever really gone.
Right.
And it feels like, seems like that, helps her a little bit. Mm-hmm. To get to that point of, well, he made his choices and no one can save him but himself. That sounds dark, but it's almost a little bit more hopeful.
Yeah.
That there's a possibility that he could make a different choice.
And that this is his path to Bendemption.
Yes. Please, Bendemption. I think Rey's dialogue is written well. It sounds like Rey.
Yeah.
I can hear Daisy Ridley say it. And I like this idea. He wanted me to join him, but I couldn't. So a little bit of that sort of like, I want to reach my hand out. I want to accept it when he reaches his hand out to me, but not on these terms.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. Leia introducing Rey as Luke's student to Yendor. That's another great scene.
Yeah,
where
fun little moment.
Yendor's like, well, who are you? And he's like, I don't know. Pilot, what are you flying? The Millennium Falcon. That's pretty cool.
That's cool.
And Leia's like, and also she was Luke's student. And Yendor's like, that's a part where I got a little bit of what I craved of that.
Yeah.
Like these people know the power of a Jedi, the power of the Force, and even the glimmer of hope that's also who Rey is or Rey can be.
Yeah.
Impacts the battle was really interesting to me.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. Anything else in that you particularly responded to?
There's that connection between Rey and Leia. I like that in the craziness of it all. Rey knows what she has and Leia can talk to her. And when I said like Rey's, sulking in the corners, you know, that's a more of a joke, but Rey's got a lot on her mind, and I like that she realizes Leia's kind of the only one right now that could understand. And then we'll see where that goes, because maybe, you know, this line of everyone thinks they know me, but no one does. Does Leia fall into that category? I don't think so. I don't think she will.
Yeah.
And those embraces and everything we've seen in the Rise of Skywalker trailers, I just like that it builds on what they already had going back to Force Awakens, an immediate connection.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of Rey and Leia's connection, they, on a practical level, it's built up because Rey and Finn are talking about something, but we don't know what. And then we eventually get the reveal that Rey just senses that they're not safe on Ryloth, right, that something's coming for them. Leia seems to sense the same thing, right, too, and they have this shared moment.
Right.
And from that comes this passage that is interesting by itself and I want to talk about because it got picked up and ran with in a weird way.
Yeah.
Leia, these are Leia's thoughts. The girl was close, so close to something big. Bigger than Leia, maybe even Luke, if that was possible. But Leia knew she wasn't the one to ultimately get her there. That would be someone else. Nevertheless, she would do what she could for Rey while she could.
Mm.
All right, there's a lot in that. So what's most exciting to you?
So I immediately pulled from that, and the focus was on Leia knew she wasn't the one to ultimately get her there. That would be someone else. So, gosh, talk about wild speculation. Is that Kylo? Is that the redemption of Ben? Is it Palpatine? Is it the ghost of Luke? I don't know, but it's a pretty important line to me that I think we're going to come back and revisit.
But from Leia's perspective, is it just someone who's not me? Because I can only offer so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or it certainly does come across with great weight of, like, who will it be who helps Rey become...
Who could it be now? I don't think this is a direct Episode 9 preview. You know, going into Force Awakens, we'd be like, this definitely means something. It's a good setup for what could happen.
Yeah.
And it raises those questions, which is fun.
Yeah. And I like that it is also a setup, if various fan theories are true, that those scenes where Rey is running and throwing the lightsaber and Leia's there, that... that maybe Leia is kind of pseudo training her of, look, I'm not an expert Jedi. I can't teach you this form of lightsaber fighting, but I know the Force and I can, you know, guide you in this sort of pseudo training way of, like, hey, this is what I have to offer.
Yeah.
Like that's interesting to me. The girl was so close to something big, bigger than Leia, maybe even Luke, if that was possible. So this got picked up by, I don't honestly remember what website, but I just saw a clickbait article saying something along the lines of Star Wars reveals Rey is more powerful than Luke and Anakin. And it's just yet another reminder, as we've been doing here a lot on Force Center, to watch out for the articles that take something grossly out of context and say it in the most potentially controversial way as possible.
Yeah. I think in the early days, we didn't necessarily go out of our way. We're not going out to call anyone out or any of that kind of stuff. But I think it's time and time again, it's used by, like, people I know. I always make these jokes about going on Facebook and I'll see, like, the one with the Afro comic with the female character that was like, oh, I had the Empire in control, Palpatine messed it up, I was the one coming up with all this stuff. And then the articles from some of those websites, and so funny, they all have the same thing. Star Wars reveals. And go get your clicks, get your money, whatever. But I see my normal, somewhat rational friends putting link into those on Facebook and like, oh, see, more proof that this is just Disney killed it all. And that's what it's got to the point where we're fighting back a little bit against
that. We want to push back against the darkness with the light of read the thing in its context.
Force Center Army, go, you see a friend, I'm not saying fight people online, just say, hey man, read the article.
Yeah, read the article.
Or better, read the comic or the book that they're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
There's nothing in here that says that.
Yeah, bigger, maybe even Luke, if that is possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and by the way, so what if she's more powerful than Luke? But
yeah, exactly, yeah, exactly.
And it's also some. It's just, yeah.
Getting to the actual context.
Yes.
I love that Leia senses the Force. She doesn't spend a lot of time trying to get it to obey her will, right? She did when she absolutely needed to survive the explosion on the Raddus there. So I like that she relates to Rey of like, you feel things the way that I do, that you feel something's coming. And I sense in you this great power, this great connection to the Force, but you're not quite ready or willing to open yourself to it for some reason. And I like that image that she is a volcano of connection to the Force, and she's just afraid to open it up.
Yeah.
Right? And that Leia would sense that. That's really exciting because that it fits with what's going on with Rey in these Road to Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah.
Sets her up for an interesting journey in the Rise of Skywalker of what happens when she just manages to
really get it
on reach into all of it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. All right. So moving along to Rose. She's fine.
She's all right.
She's fine. She got up.
She got up.
Yep.
Dusted herself off.
Yep.
Back in it.
Yeah. How did you feel about that? That was, I think, because it's happening so soon after Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Did you feel like, well, we'll tell that story some other time? Do you feel like it's just, good. Hey, she was wounded. There was some Bacta. She's good.
I think if you can get some Bacta, maybe Han had some in the back of the Falcon left there, a little Bacta bath, I think you're A-okay.
If
Luke can take a day or two to recover from a Wampa mauling his face and nearly dying in the snow. Rose just had a real bad car crash. And I think she's all right. Yeah, I'm fine with it.
I feel like Rose in some way is the character who got maybe the least, we learned the least about her.
Yeah.
I did really like when Leia said that Leia was thinking this, Rose is dedicated, hopeful, looking for connection, and reminded her of a young Luke.
It's interesting.
I thought that was a great take on what we see of Rose in The Last Jedi and saying, it does. Rose does remind me of the Luke from one of my favorite quotes in A New Hope of like, I care. That youth in that, like, I'm not in denial. I'm not blind about what's happening, but look, we can really do something.
Yeah.
We can make a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did anything else about Rose jump out at you besides the thing we're going to talk about next?
Yeah, the next one is the most important one. No, Rose is there, and I like that she's there. I think we still need a little bit more about Rose. I think we as an audience and writers and creators, I think we're still waiting to learn a little bit more about Rose. Now, there's been a lot of little books and comics and everything. The Age of Resistance Rose Tico comic is really good. Really good. So I still want more Rose.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, one thing it appears that we're not going to get, which we've had rumbles about, but this book leans into it, is Rose and Finn not romantically involved. There's a quick, interesting conversation between Poe and Finn where,
like, real quick,
Poe sees Rey and Finn with their heads together and kind of interrupts. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. Was there, and Finn's like, no, nothing with Rey. And then Poe's like, well, since I'm asking, how about you and Rose? And Finn's got that line just like, no, we talked about it. Crate was just a moment. There's nothing.
Yeah.
We're friends.
Yeah.
How did you feel about, shipping for people who do it is such a big thing. And this is just like, oh, here are two shipping balloons. Let's let the air out of them. Again, maybe this is what Finn thinks now.
Yeah.
You know? And I will say, in the Spark of the Resistance, and I believe the Allegiance comic, Rose expresses concern that Finn is on a really dangerous mission. And I interpret it as maybe Rose still has feelings for Finn, but Finn is not reciprocating or comprehending
Not ready, this is someone who grew up a number.
Yeah,
his connections came a little later in life. Yeah, there could be some of that there, but it seemed a real, like, quick, wow, okay, there we go, these are the conversations that I would love to have. If Rebecca Roanhorse is like, cool, hey, so I have some ideas about Rose and Finn. Nope, no you don't. No you don't.
There's no there.
But this is also a real big answer that I don't know that they would just be like, you just answered here in this line.
Yeah.
And again, luck and change. We got a year to in storyline to Rise of Skywalker.
And this was one of the major things in the Rise of Skywalker celebration panel, right?
Yeah.
Getting,
People
Stephen
were asking.
Colbert, right?
Yeah.
It was Stephen Colbert, wasn't it?
Yeah.
pushing John Boyega, and John Boyega's making jokes about, like, yeah. No, he's wild and free, you know? Yep. It's no Ray romance, no
yep.
No Rose romance. There is intimacy mm-hmm. of an ambiguous kind, but it's definitely there. I do like that the book takes time to establish and celebrate the connection between mm-hmm. Poe and Finn.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? They have a lot. In this continuing scene... they talk about the different things that Finn talks about, things that he kind of hasn't experienced. Mm-hmm. And it has that, like, hey, remember, I was a number not long ago.
Yeah.
And they have that that great moment of, like, yeah, Poe gave you your name. That's strong. That's a strong, intimate connection. There's the lines about, like, strong emotion passed between them. Right. How did you take all that?
All of it, especially the tie thing, stood out in a way I've not yet felt
okay.
in previous Star Wars things. This all could be, I mean, Josh McCuga tied my tie on the show because I was like, can you do a better knot for me? If you're looking for shipping clues, Finn and Poe, there could be absolutely none in this, or there could be a lot, which is
right.
Same. And this could be a very brotherly relationship, but this is the first time. And I'm not much of a shipper, and I know you're not either. But this is the first time I thought, okay, this could be the path they're going to.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't just simple little silly things of, they hugged and they felt awkward about it. No, it was a constant and consistent stream of affection for each other.
Yeah.
In a way that, again, could very well just be brotherly. But it stood out to me. It's before I read any articles about it.
Yeah. I really liked that the book was showing an undeniable connection, mm-hmm. and I would even say love between them.
Yeah, yeah.
And a care for one another. And you know, from Finn's perspective, like, you gave me my name. I'm taking my first steps into this world. And Poe is like, I really screwed up, man, and getting that forgiveness from Finn. And so, like, there's an undeniable connection. And it is interesting that in the book right now, you could absolutely take that as they're going to be romantically linked. Or you can say, like, no, it's just it's a different mm-hmm. kind of love. And I like that it is open, and we're going to see what the movie delivers.
Yeah, yeah. Again, it's the first I had the, you know, from the jacket exchange in Force Awakens on, and this has been part of the conversation, and it's been fun. They play with it on stage a lot too.
Yes, they make
on Twitter. I've seen Boyega specifically tweet out some stuff, joking around about it. I wouldn't, you know, and we have a larger discussion about that. Like, you know, was that always planned? Is it a reaction to something? It's just like, yeah, let's do this, and all of it could end up in a very positive space. I don't know. But this is this again, the first time I was like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to ignore such a great, well-written, intimate moment mm-hmm. between these people who have reason to be connected following immediately after. I have no romantic entanglements.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a great scene when they have to go undercover and Poe doing Finn's tie that you're talking about. Finn insisting on the starboard tie clip, even though they're supposed to kind of be undercover.
Undercover?
It's such a great, like, no, I'm all in now.
Come on,
Finn. All in. One of my very favorite details in the entire book is Finn needs to come up with a cover name.
Yes.
In the espionage, and he wants to be Cad Genty, which it turns out is a pop culture hero who appears in holovids and comics of some kind. However, comic books, I guess they're all on the data pads. We learn that Finn got these smuggled in when he was first order and, like, stayed up late and read comic books about a dashing hero. And, like, that's such a great detail. Like, okay, well, we already know that he's a character who had the strength to to make the different choice. When he had the opportunity to and say, I'm not going to kill for them, as he says in The Force Awakens. But to know that maybe he had this pop culture, Star Wars, James Bond, whoever, Indiana Jones, whoever Cad Genty is, he had that in the back of his mind of, like, I could do the right thing like Cad Genty.
Yep. And then looks across the table and sees Poe Dameron in a Cad Genty jacket.
Yeah. That's so awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that kind of in-world seeing that there's pop culture entertainment in Star Wars.
Yeah, and it's gonna if it's there, it's gonna have an impact. Poe, some details. Top by Wedge, is that?
Yeah, I like that.
That wasn't in any of the comics.
That's my knowledge.
Yeah, and we know that Wedge was a teacher for a long time.
The New Republic, and that's where Poe started, and that would make a lot of sense. Yeah, for me, it always been focused on Snap.
Yeah.
You know, his training on the fly with Snap and everything, but I like that little detail.
Yeah, yeah.
Legacy of Wedge is there.
It is powerfully there. Not just Wedge being upset about his space chickens. Also, he taught Poe everything he knew.
Yeah.
We've talked a lot about Poe's trauma, but a specific thing jumped out to me that he is really guilty about the mutiny and the deaths that arose from it, but he still thinks taking out the Fulminatrix was the right call.
I understand that, because I still think it was the right call, too. But it's part of it. It's part of the confusion. You know, it's part of what he's dealing with.
Like, right.
But hey, look what we did. We got out of that. We might not have got out of that part.
Yeah.
But maybe he thinks if only he had learned the lesson of that, though, and applied it going forward. I understand where he's coming from on that.
Yeah.
Because I still think it's needed.
Yeah. And that, hey, it's a risky thing and it's war and people died is one thing. And like, I understand it really took a risk. I can't always take a risk and some people die, but that's really different than I betrayed the resistance.
Right.
By making a different call.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very interesting and will fuel. It was Poe Wright debates, really accepts his leadership role. And it is made canon in this book and also in that Spark of Resistance book. That Poe's hair is good.
Right.
Both those books feature discussions of how awesome Poe's hair is.
Mm.
Are you a fan of, do you stan Poe's hair?
This is 100% this is in canon and in our own legends. He's got the best hair in the world.
Yeah. Do you like that focus or is it a little too in world?
Nah, it's fun. Okay. You look at Poe, he's a nice guy. You think he doesn't realize he has good hair?
Yeah.
People know.
Yeah, people know. People know. The whole galaxy knows now. Mm-hmm. Another bit of canon business, the time frame. There's a real implication to me that the First Order has been on Akiva and Corellia for a while, before the Force Awakens, because they talk about they came to Akiva and there was an election to get a bureaucrat who is sympathetic to them elected because they thought that would make things easier.
Right.
Corellia, they've already kind of taken over some of the actual production, right?
Production, yeah. I think this is an interesting reveal as we start to try to put together the picture of the First Order before Force Awakens and how it's built. We know a little bit from Bloodlines, you know, where they're starting to get their funds and they were building out there in the unknown regions, all that kind of stuff. So it's another angle of it of, all right, we think we're going to start making some moves into the galaxy. What are ways to do it? We talked about it with Wincher Brat, but the elections, industry, makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, it just makes the sort of denial of the New Republic even worse, right?
Yeah,
to be
it's right there.
We're over in our own space near the unknown regions. But look, we just popped into Corellia and we asked them, if they would like to build some ships for us, and they were like, cool,
yeah,
yeah. And maybe you can imagine that they upped the pressure. And maybe I'm wrong about the way I'm reading it, but just the amount of events that are described as happening on Corellia, like, how could that happen in the time span of The Force Awakens and Last Jedi?
One day we'll get that full picture, the story of the First Order. Yeah. This is a little clue.
The Force Awakens, or the First Order timeline, rather. Yeah. Maz, we talked a little bit about her already. She wants to help in her own way. She encourages Poe to be the light. She ends up, with everything we've talked, we haven't really talked about the plot much. That's all about this list. Maz is the one who tells them about the list and gets them to the party where they can get the list.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about Maz? Do you think she's going to be a major factor in 9, or do you think she's going to play a role like she did in Last Jedi and in this book, where it's like, well, I got my own thing, but here's a crucial bit of information.
I think it's a crucial bit of information. Isn't that what we now think she's in that one shot of the briefing?
Oh, yeah.
Because the people were joking about the big Muppet character you and I were talking about.
Yeah, the big blue furry.
And use that to distract the fact that Maz is standing right next to Poe.
Okay.
People out there, you can confirm for us. I'm not going to look right now. So I think, but even then, I think it will be a small key contribution.
Yeah, I can see her showing up at the last minute in some big old ship, guns blazing. Here comes wild Maz Kanata to the rescue.
The Maz cruiser.
Yeah. One other kind of big canon reveal, I guess. Say canon reveal. A Leia moment. The reveal that Ransom Castrofo,
yes,
who I think many of us really love from Bloodline, mm-hmm, is alive. Leia's going on a hunch. Maybe the Force, that the initials RC on the list mean this guy. Mm-hmm. I love that it is him. He gets rescued because it's a win for Leia, finally. Mm. She's lost so many friends. This is one that she assumed was gone years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's a great payoff on Leia always being the messenger of hope.
Yeah.
Of, after all these friends I've lost, and my brother, my husband, maybe my son forever, I got one friend back that I thought was gone. That, oh man, it makes me happy for Leia.
Yeah, absolutely, because that's part of the Last Jedi story of hers, is just like, I've lost too much, and I always talk about the eyes of Leia on Crait and just the pain, and it's decades of loss going back to Alderaan, going back to before. So yeah, that's a great little moment. I hadn't really thought about it in those terms until you said it there. I'm just like, she got one back.
Yeah.
She got one back.
A little bit of hope rewarded. Like, this is why we hope.
Yeah.
So, as a look at the kind of major canon moments, mm-hmm, that popped, as we begin to wrap up our conversation about Resistance Reborn, it is so much of an all-star team, as you said, Ken. Yeah. So, I just wanted to run down the list of characters.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's anything that we need or want to scream out into the world about these characters. So, you mentioned Braca. That's actually a planet.
Right.
Not a person, but it's a... this scavenger salvage planet that they go to that is also going to be in Jedi Fallen Order. So it's got a planet that we're going to get to run around on.
It's
that
a preview.
We didn't even know yet, which is insane.
They're going to reread this and go, Braca.
Braca. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Zae Versio and Shriv from Battlefront 2 video game. Shriv is a big fan favorite.
Yeah.
I think because of the just general, like, I'm in this, but
say thank you or anything.
The fun snark. I love the conversation about if you're kind of born off planet and spend most of your time as in ships, you're a space baby.
Yeah.
That's classic Shriv.
Yeah.
Classic Shriv. They're from the Battlefront 2 video game. Then got Black Squadron, which is, you know, mentioned in Force Awakens.
Yeah,
characters appear, but they're really from the Poe Dameron comic book, right?
Yeah.
You got, Snap Wexley, who's also from the Aftermath novels, from them, in that he is one of the very main characters. Jess Pava, Sir Lindo Javos, Carrie Coon, right?
Yeah, who's Snap's wife.
Snap's wife, yeah. So that's if you've been reading those comics, or if, like me, you just binged them in the last week, that's a big dose of, here's this other thread of Star Wars storytelling and symbolism.
And carrying over a lot, like the little running joke of Jess Pava being the destroyer of astromech droids. And
so great.
A lot of that carried over.
Yeah, yeah. And then Nora Wexley is from the novel Aftermath, but also really the sort of the family of Wedge Antilles.
Yeah.
Nora, the planet Akiva, Temin Wexley not wanting to be called Temin. He's called Snap now.
Yep.
All of that is flowing out of Aftermath storytelling.
Yeah. It's good to have. You know, Wedge was the big sell. You know, we don't even have the cover, because he's on the cover, and they were hiding that, and that kind of had leaked. So the press copies had no covers.
Oh, is that why the press copy didn't have colors?
No covers.
Wow.
But Wedge is there, but it's a lot more than Wedge, too. Wedge is the highlight, but Nora coming back was important, too.
Yeah.
And a lot of the Aftermath stuff.
And then Nora's always been one of my favorite characters from the books. So I was thrilled that she was returning and characterized, you know, very accurately to the way she's presented in Aftermath as well. We got Ransom Castrofo from Bloodline that we just talked about, Yendor from Lost Stars and Bloodline, both Claudia Gray novels. Gracchus the Hutt is mentioned, who appears in both the Poe Dameron comic and the main Star Wars comic line.
Yeah, right? Buff Hutt. He works out. He works out a little bit.
Yeah, he collects lightsabers and he lifts.
Yep,
that's
he does.
Gracchus the Hutt.
Yep.
General Reekin from Empire Strikes Back, right?
Man.
Original trilogy.
General Carlos Reikin coming back is something I never thought I'd see. And that just spoke to my old crusty officer loving heart. And, you know, he doesn't have a super big part, but he's there. And I love that Leia's like, we don't just need warriors. We need strategy. We need strategic minds. We need leaders. And Reikin, who's got to be old, man.
Yeah.
Got to be in his 80s or something.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'll come back.
All right, I'll do it. I think my personal favorite.
I cheered for you.
Orimarco, originally known as the action figure Prune Face from Return of the Jedi. There's even some fun jokes about, like, were you there? You're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're Leia's like, were you? And she, you know, but it's like, I was 2 feet over from
yes,
you.
Yes, yes, yeah. Yeah, which they I grew up thinking for so long. I had that Prune Face action figure,
yeah.
And like, oh, this is from Jabba's Palace, right? Like, no, they're very briefly the Dracilian,
yeah.
The respectable Dracilian with the cool eye patch. And in Legends, he's been called Orimarco, and this is, they finally put him back in yeah. canon as Orimarco, which is, I think, a more respectable name than Prune Face.
A little bit.
Tessa Naz, ex-Imperial warlord from Rat Attack.
Yeah.
Rat Attack is deep in canon, where it's a war world where Count Dooku found Asajj Ventress. Asajj's backstory is all tied up with that, but Tessa Naz herself, new character.
And I liked her a lot. Kind of a bigger warlord-sized character. They talk about her imposing nature and interesting take, again, on rebirth and being reborn, an Imperial warlord now in the Resistance.
Yeah, yeah, and saying, like, but this is where I want to be because I recognize I did things wrong and I want to make them right. There is a random reference to Leia recording memoirs, which is a reference to, I can't remember if BZ4CO is shouted out in particular. I think the droid is.
Yeah.
But that's the framing device of the middle reader Leia book, Moving Target, which was on the Journey to the Force Awakens, where Leia tells this adventure about how they got the shuttle Tyderium because PZ4CO is reminding Leia, you have to record all your memoirs. It's like that, the layer of canon shout-outs, and I'm sure that there's missing a bunch.
I want that actual memoir.
Oh, yeah, the full Leia memoirs.
Give me that.
Yeah,
give me that.
PZ4CO, lay them on us. Of course, from the movies, Lieutenant Connix, played by Billy Lord, Nine Numb, several other, I think, minor characters from the actual movies. So that was my attempt to list the characters. I'm sure I missed some. There's a lot.
Yeah, but you did great. That's it, man.
Yeah, other new characters. So my question for you is, seeing all these characters, did it make you wonder where any other characters were?
Absolutely. Hera was the one we talked about.
Right.
Once you start going to Ryloth and you're advancing the story a number of years, that makes sense. You know, all right, so we believe we've seen the ghost. So maybe we'll get that answer somewhere else and material leading up or coming out of 9. Sabine, Ezra, all those kind of things. I never thought they were going to pop up. Jason Syndulla, you have listed here on our list. We don't think
the mystery child.
It is the official position of Force Center that we do not believe Jason Syndulla factors into anything.
He's running Mortis.
He's running the gift shop and Mortis and the training dojo. You have listed, and this is one I thought about, Thane Kyrell and Sienna Ree.
Yeah.
We don't. There's always there's a need perhaps for a Lost Stars sequel because it ends in a way where you want to know more, and because they're both alive, and because that is 30 years or so prior to this, to advance them a number of years, but still they'd be younger than Riken. They would clearly be valuable to this story.
Incredibly valuable. Yeah, the other one I thought of while we were talking. Oh, go ahead, sir.
And Claudia hasn't a chance to finish that story, so that's probably one of the reasons why you couldn't add them elsewhere, maybe. But I do wonder about them.
Yeah.
They'd be valuable.
They would be great. Mm-hmm. The other one that occurred to me, because I also like this character a lot, is Sinjarath Valis.
Yes.
From Aftermath. And he kind of left off being in a aide to Mon Mothma.
Yep.
So maybe he retired with Mon Mothma. But this whole thing is come out of retirement.
Sinjar's a character I hope we see again. I hope we hear from again. I would love, you know, I know Wendig's relationship with Star Wars right now is maybe a little difficult, strained for other reasons. But that's a character I'd like to see come back.
Yeah, it would be absolutely great to see him come back and live again to fight another day. But the great part of the way this book was constructed is all these characters could be hiding out. They could be in custody of the First Order. Like, the door is still open.
Yeah, that's the thing, too. Yeah, yeah. And with Sinjar, that would make some sense.
Yeah. All right, we're wrapping up our conversation. As always, we could talk about this book forever because it's very, very dense. But I want to talk about the ending. They get reborn on an emotional level, on a practical level. They get a CR-90 Corvette and some X-Wings. They rescue some allies from Corellia. They get a hold of that list so they can find and rescue other allies.
Yeah.
So they've got, like, material victory, right?
Yeah,
and they've got next steps to take. But they decide, well, look, if we travel around in a big group, we're a target. Mm-hmm. And Poe gives that great speech of, like, we're going to spread out, and we're if people are already fighting, we're going to help them. If they're not fighting yet, we're going to try to convince them to fight, and the resistance is going to be everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that ending?
I like it a lot. Again, what were my expectations coming in? Big fights. We got ships. We're going to go and fight the First Order. No, it's not how it's going to work, especially at this point. It might be how it works in episode 9, but to get there, you're going to need to do things like this and think of the storytelling opportunities you got with this, the comic books you can tell. It just made a lot of sense in new canon, and when I closed the book, I remember just that feeling of great satisfaction that I know that this is the right way for the resistance to be reborn.
Yeah, exactly. And I think whatever it does, whatever the storytelling happens to be in kind of a real practical level of, like, when we catch up to the resistance in Rise of Skywalker, they've got a big base like Hoth and they're all together and they're ready to fight. Or, you know, that great shot that we see in the trailer of all those ships. Is that the first time the whole resistance comes together
after
all this, this, you know, year of time that passes or however much time exactly passes? All that stuff is, like, it's exciting. Who knows? But I like that the book definitively ends emotionally on everything that the trailers have been leading to. You know, the 1,000 generations live in you now. We'll always be with you, but this is your fight. Ends on Rey, Poe, and Finn kind of arms around each other, seeing Leia kind of give him the emotional thumbs up.
Yeah.
Like, she looks a little bit more content. Why? Because she knows we've got this.
We got it.
We are the resistance. And, like, emotionally, if you ever have any doubt that this final movie is about the new generation truly stepping up and moving into the future, this book is another reminder of that is where this is going.
Very clear. Very clear indeed. The future is looking bright because they have everything they need.
Exactly. So that is our look at Resistance Reborn.
Hey, that was a great deep look. It's not the end of an era. We clearly got more Star Wars books coming. But this was definitely, as we go into 9 and the end of the Skywalker saga, like you said, you kind of have to wonder. We're starting to wrap all things up. Will there be stories on the other side of this? Well, of course, the stories are going to go on. I'm waiting for that Kenobi, Journals of Kenobi redo, like an actual canon version of it.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of things there. But this really felt like the end of high school.
Yes, these were the times of our resistance. Yeah.
So thank you, Joseph, for taking us through.
Absolutely.
Thanks to Rebecca Ronors for writing this great book and Del Rey for putting it out. We really love what they've done the last few years, and this is, looks like a great culmination of that. If you want to listen to more Force Center, if you're finding us for the first time, we're available on a lot of podcast locations. Just search your favorite one to find us. We have a website, forcecenterpod.podomatic.net, to get some information. We're on YouTube, Instagram. Follow us on Twitter at ForceCenterPod. Use the hashtag ForceCenter. Join the conversation and like us on Facebook. We got a Patreon page, patreon.com/ForceCenter, where you can support us as well. Joseph, it's a perfect time of year. You're wearing a ForceCenter shirt.
I am. It says Speculate Responsibly, designed by the wonderful Brian Ward. You can find that on our TeePublic site.
Absolutely. tpublic.com/YouTube/ForceCenter. And then our own stuff. You can follow me at @CadNapsock. Information on a lot of things like books, shows, and more is there. And Joseph, things you're working on can be found on your website.
Yeah. So I got comedy albums, live comedy shows. I wrote a comedy book a while back. It's partially funny because it's out of date about pop culture. So have fun with that. Anyway, it's all on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram as @JosephScrimshaw.
All right. That is it for now. Until the next book. This has been your Resistance Reborn review on Force Center.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.